And welcome to Transcendent. My name is Joe Jones, and I'm the dad.
And my name is Raya Jones, and I am the daughter.
Today we'd like to talk about accepting your LGBTQ child and why it matters.
That's right. We think that family is really important. And there are very few things in life that matter more than family. And those relationships are so important. And so whatever we can do to keep those going and to keep ourselves having good relationships is what we want to do, right?
Absolutely. This is not something to argue about. This is something to discuss and accept. And if I don't, I lose you. And I knew that. So it was really important for me right at the very beginning to do that. Now, I understand that's just one way people can react. Mom didn't react exactly the same way. Maybe at the time she did, but she had a harder time. She had to go through more stages than I did to accept it.
Right. Well, in one of the advantages or disadvantages that Mom had is she didn't hear it from me.
Oh.
She heard it from Diana, my ex-wife. So at the time, this was back in 2014 when we were first dealing with this, and I was trying to figure out what am I going to do with all of this. And Diana and I were talking and trying to figure out a way to make this work. And that was a very, very difficult year. And one day she said, "I'm going to tell your mom." And I said, "Sure, fine. Go ahead and tell her." And so they were working together at a Lioness thing. I think it was Stuff the Bus, if I remember. They were gathering school equipment for kids. And during that time, Diana was having a really tough time. And she said, "There's something that I need to tell you." And that's when she told Mom. So then she came home. Diana came home and told me that she had told Mom. But I didn't talk to Mom. So Mom knew. And I knew that Mom knew, but Mom and I didn't talk about it. I think that probably made it some ways easier and some ways harder.
And I didn't know a thing. I was completely in the dark.
I think they asked. I don't remember who it was, if it was Diana or I don't remember who wanted that. But I just remember then one day you came over, so she couldn't keep it as a secret anymore. So she and Diana planned that you were both going to come over and we were going to have a discussion.
Exactly.
And so we put the kids to bed and we sat in the living room. And I remember having a discussion that time. And I said, why are Mom and Dad here? And Diana said, "Oh, it's nice to have them come in and visit." And then you came and sat down in the living room, and I think it was Mom that started, if I recall. Either Mom or Diana started and said, "Well, we want to get everything out on the table." And that's how it started.
But you're the one that actually told me. Neither one of them actually said it. You're the one that said it.
That's right. So once it was all coming out on the table, and this was not thrust upon me, if I recall, I think that I wanted to talk about it because it was hard. It was a hard year. This was, for me, this was a year of internal torment. You know, it was all inside and everybody could see that I was wrestling with things and really having a tough time. Everybody at work knew that I was having issues, but nobody knew what the problem was. And at that time, I think that Diana didn't feel comfortable bringing a lot of other people in. So we didn't, but I was getting more and more to the point where I just wanted to explode. I couldn't keep it in any longer. So I think it was Mom that probably made the decision because Mom was feeling the same way. She thought, "I have the secret and I can't hold the secret. I need to talk about this." And I needed to talk about it. Anyway, I don't remember all of the who did what or why everything happened, but I remember that we were all together in the living room. And whoever started it, it was, you know, somebody, Mom, I think, turned to me and said, "Well, why don't you tell us what's going on? And I just kind of started at the beginning, and it was like, it was all out there, just like that.
And all I did is listen. I didn't comment. I remember that. But it will be helpful to know where I stood and where I was at that time. I can remember going back to my younger days, into my college days, into my military days, and long after that, I was one of the people that I can tell you definitely had a prejudice against LGBTQ. Absolutely. In fact, you and I working together had a transgender person working for us.
We sure did.
And to change the name, she chose her own name, and she chose Heather. And I always referred to her as Man Heather.
Not in public.
No, just no. Between you and me. Because she did not make that transition well. She was very manly, and it was fairly obvious to everyone. And so I always referred to her in when you and I were just speaking. Man Heather. And that was, to me, kind of funny in a way. And I didn't mind that she was who she was, but I thought it was an opportunity for a lot of jokes.
Right. You accepted her.
Yes.
But you didn't really accept her. You accepted her publicly, and you would never make fun of her to her face.
Correct.
But you thought it was funny.
Yes. But my best friend, who I was in the military with, he and I used to make a lot of jokes about gays, a lot. And it was hard for us to accept that, and we would use words that aren't appropriate. And that probably continued right up to even to the point where you actually came out and began to tell me about this. And it... I quickly reformed, but I don't know how long that transition for me to go to full acceptance came, but it was fairly quick.
You know, it wasn't just you, though, because I think I had that same thing. It's not like I was exempt from this.
True.
So, because for me, because I have always been attracted exclusively to women, it was a lot harder to come to terms with for me. Because many people, at least in those days, thought that if you were transgender, it must be, it's sort of like gay plus. Like you're attracted to men, and then you just make that next little jump over to, okay, now being a woman so that you can, because everybody wants to, of course, be straight is what we kind of figure. And so for me, as somebody that was attracted to women, I never identified as LGBTQ at all. I never thought of myself as gay. I never thought of myself. And in fact, I didn't even realize that I was transgender. I always knew that I wanted to be a woman, but I thought, well, of course, I know that I can't. That can never be an option for me, because I don't want to be like those weird transgender people. And so I think I had just as much of that as anybody else did. I mean, we growing up in high school, we used to make fun of gay people all the time, and I didn't know that actual gay people existed.
Me too. When I was much younger. I thought that's something people just say, and it doesn't really happen. But by the time I got into even high school, I was aware that there were people like that around, but I never thought I never met one.
Right? No, it was very much in the closet everywhere. Yeah. I didn't meet somebody that I knew was gay until I went off to college. And I remember in the dorms, they did a program where they had somebody that was gay come in. And in our dorm room den, they just, you know, we're going to have a question and answer with a gay man. And wow, you know, I was very shocked. Like I didn't, you know, it was the very first person I knew that was out.
Right. I can't tell you who I knew, but I remember in high school, I took a class in high school called Boys Foods. It was one of those elective classes. Believe me, I never cooked anything very well. But one of the guys in our group, I can remember, was very feminine. And I just always kind of assumed he probably was gay, but it was not something we ever talked about. But, and as a matter of fact, you had somebody in your class as well that was a woman or a girl that was very manly, if you remember.
Well, that played football.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And ultimately ended up being transgender as well, didn't she?
Yeah, he's a good friend.
And, of course, there's a lot of people, some famous names now that come to mind that have become transgender, and they're either famous or they're related to famous people, such as Cher's
Chaz.
Son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And,
Chaz Bono.
And, of course,
Caitlyn Jenner.
Caitlyn Jenner is uh-huh. certainly a major spokesperson for that part of the society.
Sure. One of the things that's hard with being transgender is that there's so few role models that those few that are out there have to carry a lot of weight. And one of the problems that the transgender community has had with Caitlyn Jenner is that she's very not mainstream for her views. The trans community, by and large, is going to skew more towards the left. And, of course, Caitlyn Jenner skews very far to the right from the, you know, maybe not from the right's perspective, but from the left's perspective.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, and that is it's quite a mix. You can't assume that somebody who is LGBTQ is automatically going to be on the left. You can't assume that other things that you could associate with them are going to be that way. That's not necessarily the case.
No, it's not. No, because it affects everybody equally. And so you're going to have an equal cross-section. Mm-hmm. However, because you've got two value sets, right now things change over time, you know, every decade the political parties shift a little bit and what it means to be right and left shifts a little bit. But historically, you think about being on the left as much more concerned about personal liberties and individual, justice for individuals, and the right being much more concerned about, well, being conservative, conserving how things have always been and keeping traditional values and that sort of thing. So by and large, when somebody does come out and they look at those two camps and they think, which one do I feel more at home as, it tends to skew more towards the left, because once you come out, it places you in a position where your perspective just lends itself towards that. Mm-hmm. However, that doesn't mean that who you are intrinsically skews towards that. That's going to be an equal thing across the board.
Go back to what we were talking about earlier, as was when you were first coming out. And one of the things that we suggested you do and you agreed to was that we said, well, why don't you, well, we are spending the winter in Texas, why don't you stay in our house and you can be a woman there, and then see how that works out for you before you decide to actually come out into the public. And you did that for a couple of months, I think.
Right, I did.
And then at one point you said to yourself, tell that story about what am I doing?
Right, well, it was, so that was at the end of a year, this very, very difficult year. And so you left at the very end of December, and you were gone January and February of that year. And so I came over then and watched your cat and fed your cat during that time. And so I would go to work, and then when I would come back, I would stay at your house, and I had bought some clothes from Goodwill. And I just said, okay, well, I'm going to try this out and see how it goes. And it was It was very scary. I have to say it was very, very scary because I didn't know what I was doing and I did not want to put on those clothes and look like a man in a dress. That was a big, big, you know, that was, oh, please no. Like, you know, it, that just really was not anything that was remotely exciting to me. But I realized that with a little bit of work, it was not too bad. And I had seen enough transgender people out to realize that with some work, you can pass pretty well. And I thought, well, okay, well, I'll give this a shot and see how it goes. And we'll see how much I can get in a couple of months. And so, for instance, there wasn't a whole lot that I could do at that point. I would mostly just come back and watch TV while I was wearing high heels. And I would look down at my shoes and think, oh, this feels just really nice. And I went out to eat once or twice with a friend. But that was about it. And I didn't turn heads when I went out to eat. You know, people didn't pay much attention to me at all. And I thought, well, this is not too bad. But at the end of the 2 months, I thought to myself, yeah, but it's not worth the price that I would have to pay. Because at that point, we had made it clear. Diana and I had looked through all of the options to see, was there anything that could keep our marriage together that she would be okay with and I would be okay with? And we couldn't find any common ground or anything to keep that together. And I thought, this means losing not just my marriage, but also then my family, of being able to live with my family.
Your seven children.
Seven children, right. If you know that you're going to transition and lose your marriage, you don't choose to have seven children. But we didn't know, you know, that this, I didn't know that this is where this was going to go. And that, and I knew that I would have to give up my ministry at the time because I was in a conservative church and I knew that that was going to be the end of everything at that point. And I just thought, I'm not willing to pay the price. I can't. How could I possibly give up everything that's important to me in my life?
So what that tells me is that this isn't something that you just feel like, oh, I want to turn to this and I want to be something different and I want to stand out and I want to, I think I'm going to just do this to walk away from what I had and change to something else. This is something that you really didn't want to do.
And it was not a phase. It was not a phase at all. It was not something that I wanted to want to do. I absolutely wanted to.
Yeah.
But I did not want to at all. No.
I remember once you saying to me, if you said, would you like to do that? I don't want to do this.
No.
Yeah. And that's not something I would choose to do. If you said, what would you choose? And I think that's true of so much of the community, that they would all say the same thing. I want to be accepted. I want to be part of the life that I've had, the life that I've built. I don't want to walk away from all of this. This is not a choice. It's something inside that drives me. Am I right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why self-harm and depression and suicide attempts are so much higher in the LGBTQ community because we don't want to be this way. If we could turn it off, we would turn it off.
Yes, exactly.
I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy.
It's a little bit like saying, look, I don't want to be this short. I want to be taller. You're not going to be able to be taller. You are inside what you knew you had to be. And you didn't want you couldn't say to us, well, look, I'm not short anymore. I'm going to be tall, and that's it. You just can't do it because you feel that tall people are more accepted. And so it's hard to accept that you're short. And so you're trying to make that transition because you want to be like everyone else, but it's exactly the opposite.
Right. Well, and I think, though, too, with being short and tall is a physical characteristic, whereas this is an internal and it's a desire. And so you start, there's lots of desires that we have to tell ourselves no. You know, I would desire to eat chocolate cake every single night if I could. But I tell myself no on that in lots of things that we do. I desire not to have to ever go for a run and not to have to ever work out, not to have to ever do anything that's unpleasant. Mm-hmm. But we tell ourselves sometimes, I'm going to force myself to do something that I don't want to do or not do something that I want to do because I want the results more so. However, the difference is that in this case, I got to the point where I realized the thing that I desire, if I don't have that in my life, I'm not sure that life is really worth living.
That I understand.
It really felt like life would be hollow, almost like in The Wizard of Oz, black and white versus then everything turns to color. And that for me, when I spent that 2 months at your house and I would come back and I would change clothes, it was like I hated the fact that I liked it, but it was like when I would do it, all of a sudden it turned to color.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, like life became fun again.
All right, we began this by talking about how important family acceptance matters. And I think with the beginning background like this, if those of us who are on the other side, on the accepting side, if we start by trying to understand what you're feeling, and that's difficult to explain. I understand that. It's very difficult for you to, and I'm sure everything you feel inside cannot be put into words. It's impossible to totally describe how it is.
I mean, yes, but there's a lot of things that are close. And I think if you have ever had a crush on someone, I would say that's pretty close, right? When you have a crush on someone and you can't stop thinking about them, except that it's that same feeling for who you get to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't turn off. So that you feel like it's very much like if I told you, you have to live your life, but you could never have a female partner. You can't have a wife. You can't have a girlfriend. You can't have a crush. You would think, well, I guess I could keep living my life, but that's kind of a sucky life.
Yeah, no kidding.
Is that really worth living? That was very much how I felt.
Well, I understand that. For me, if you said I couldn't sing anymore, I would not be happy. Or if I couldn't tell jokes, man, I'm not sure I'd want to live.
I think even with those things, so you would end up, you'd be disappointed, but eventually you'd deal with it. But there's something that's so fundamental for us about relationships as humans. It's how we're designed, that it's, you know, how we perpetuate the species is you find a partner and you get married and you have children. And,
yeah.
And this is what life is supposed to be when everything is working according to the narrative that we're told. But if you don't match up with that, where that doesn't feel right, and everybody else is saying, but this is what you should want.
I think what would be helpful for anyone out there that has not accepted this yes, I think the first place to start is to come to the realization that for the people on the other side, if I can call you on the other side, it's not a choice. That's what you're trying to tell me. It's not a choice.
It's not a choice.
And when we don't accept, and when we force someone out of our family, force someone out of our life, it just compounds the problem to the point where you just don't know where to turn and you feel, what can I do? Possibly commit suicide, which is exactly what we find in the fact that people, families who are unaccepting or, and especially if they're argumentative or violent or any other way, or when you see that person, you have to bring it up and debate and talk, and it's just not going to work. It's just not going to work when that happens. the most important thing that we can do on our end is really totally accept. Now, that's not a step that's easy. It was not something that I just immediately turned on to. It was something that it's a step. Find out maybe in the beginning, where do you agree? And I can tell you one area I did agree with you immediately, and that is, you're my child and you're always my child. And I love you and I always will. And that is step one.
And that's the best thing that you could have possibly done for me. In fact, you were the one that kind of gave me the nudge that I needed when I thought after this 2 months and I thought, I can't do it. I can't pay the price. I can't give everything up for this. And I tried going back, but by that point, there was no way that I could go back. And I felt like I can't go backwards and I can't go forwards. And I'm stuck right here. And there's no good answer. Going forward is not good. Going forward by transitioning is not good. And going forward by not transitioning is not acceptable anymore. And everything is a bad option. And I felt like I was at the end.
We worked together at that point. I owned the company and I saw you as the future. And you had the office right next to me. I had the corner office and you had the one right next to it. And we worked together very well. We did a lot of things together. And I thought, this is my retirement. And this is the future, not only for me, but for my inheritance. It will go this way. And you came in after I came back from Texas. You came down and you sat in the chair in front of my desk and you were crying and you said, I lost everything. I lost my family. I lost everything. And I said, you didn't lose me.
And that was so important. I couldn't have gone on. I don't know that I would have made it.
Well, I'm glad you did, because you're here now, and we're together, and it's wonderful. And I will tell you, there is life after this. There is life after the shock.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. And I'm really glad that we worked together on that, and we've come a long way since then.
I have to tell you some statistics I looked up that you'll find interesting. And it said, why does family acceptance matter? Here's some statistics. This is from Dr. Ryan's study on LGBTQ and the significant implications for your child's health and well-being. I call it your child because no matter what age they are, that's what we're talking about. So, with family rejection, people, LGBTQ people are 8 times more likely to report having attempted suicide. Imagine, 8 times more. Also, they're also nearly 6 times more likely to report high levels of depression. And without it, there's still depression, let me tell you, but it is because there's a lot there. It's not just your family, but the family has to be the biggest part of it.
That's right. You know, 1/6 would be a lot. If it was just 1/6 more likely to have depression, that would be a lot.
Yes.
This is 6 times more likely to have depression. That is so way too much.
I know. It's really, really difficult. And when you think about that, and you think to yourself, what can I do? Well, what you can do is you can talk it over. You can begin to accept it. You can begin to learn it. And you might be saying right now, I'll never accept that. Well, never is a word I never use. And it's a lot different than you think. I can remember my oldest grandson one day was staying at our house, and I said, Wes, I'm going to teach you how to play cribbage. Oh, he must have been 4th grade, I'm guessing, enough that he could do the adding and all that. And I sat down with him, and I explained cribbage to him, and he kind of went through a game with me and a little bit of the second game, and finally he looked at me and he says, "I'll never learn how to play that." Well, never isn't really the right answer. And if you think the two of you can never have a relationship again, that's you start from there and begin to look at what do you agree on? Where can you meet to begin with? And it might take a lot longer than it did for me, and it might take a lot of steps on both sides. But you can do that. But the thing you don't want to do is just put the other person out of your life. You don't want to put your father out of your life. And you don't want to put your daughter out of your life, or your son, whoever it is. If that's what you want to do, you should have thrown them out when they were babies. Because this is the relationship that you both really want. And the two of you are the only people who can make that happen. Nobody else is going to make that happen for you. It's yours. You own it, and it's your responsibility to make it work.
When you have a situation where you're not seeing eye to eye, I learned this from you in business, that's the place to start, is by finding common ground. And I will never forget the time that we had a business negotiation that we had worked out most of the details, but all of a sudden it was starting to go south. And the person that was working on it on our side and the person that was working with it on the other company's side were starting to butt heads, and it was not looking very good. And you said, "Look, we'll come together. We'll have a phone call." Do you remember this, when we were working on one of the dolls deals? And you said, "We're going to have a phone call and we'll all come together." So we put it on speakerphone and we all got together, and you started the conversation right away by saying, first you joked around a little bit, and you made sure that they knew that we were all kind of together and having fun. And then you started and you found the common ground right away. "Okay, look, here's the things that we know. We know we both want to have this kind of a deal, and we want this and that." And you found all of the common ground. And then after you spent 5 or 10 minutes going through all of the common ground, we had built so much momentum in the conversation that when we got to the parts that we were disagreeing on, it went like there was no issue at all. And we gave a little bit and they gave a little bit, and it was done almost immediately. And it was not a big deal. And I learned a very valuable lesson that day, that if you start with your disagreements, you build momentum in the wrong direction.
That's absolutely right. Boy, you hit the nail on the head. That is exactly, and that's what happens. That's what happens when you already are stewing about something and you meet the person, and that's where you begin. It's going to go south.
It actually, it reminds me of how I first began my relationship after transition with my oldest daughter. So she had a very difficult time with this at first. She was not happy about this.
And how old was she at the time?
15.
Okay.
I think 15, yeah. This was very, very difficult for her, and she was very angry about it. The entire month of June, she did not talk to me. But we were all together for a family event. And she decided to herself, now she didn't tell me this at the time, but having talked about it since then, she thought, "Well, I can either have a relationship or not, and I would rather have a relationship than not have one." So we sat down and we played a game of backgammon, I think, or some game, chess or checkers or something. We were at your house, and we pulled out some kind of a tabletop game, and we were able to focus on the game. So it was something that we had in common together. We could focus on doing this other thing. And after we played a game, then maybe we played another game. And that was about it. But that was our very first beginning of building our relationship together again.
That's a great way to start. And if you can do that, and you know, we're not going to spend a lot of time together today, but let's start with something like this, and let's resolve not to have any negative conversation at this point. Give us 20 minutes, give us a half hour, give us an hour, whatever. But for that time, and maybe you don't want to play, maybe you're not game people, go get ice cream together. And maybe it's, maybe there's a chill in the air and it doesn't matter. Just get started with something and don't talk about the things that are dividing you. Just talk about the things that are drawing you together.
Find the common ground.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's really important.
Because if you don't do it now, you might never be able to. And if you don't, you'll always regret it.
Well, I think that's it for this week. And we hope you'll enjoy the podcast. We'd like to hear from you. If you have questions, you have ideas, if you have subjects you'd like us to address, we'd like to hear from you. And you can write us at an email. Email us at transcendent@gmail.com. And that's TRANDESCENDANT @gmail.com. So we would love to hear from you. And also, we encourage you to share with others, tell other people to tune into our podcast, and we look forward to hearing back from you. We look forward to building a relationship with you as you're going to be building a relationship with your parent or your child.
That's right. Tell a friend to tell a friend.